Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today, we have a special episode with a few voices who are working to see a future for Israel as the partner and neighbor of Palestinians. Abu Mazen, also known as the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, is 88 years old and has been running the West Bank and East Jerusalem since 2005. Sunday, the Israel Daily News podcast attended an ideas meeting, if you will, at the Knesset, or Parliament. That's how you would call it in English. The event, hosted by member of Knesset Idan Rol and member of Knesset Sharon Haskel, had some 20 to 25 researchers, scholars, and experts to discuss what they call the day after Abu Mazen. Each person had 3.5 minutes to speak, but I would say each person went on for more like 8 minutes each. I sat and listened in Hebrew to all the presentations and decided to grab 3 voices from the room to share their ideas for the future and to do it for all of you in English. Let's start with Dr. Moti Kedar, an Israeli scholar of Arab culture and a lecturer at Bar-Ilan University. He's also the vice president of a news outlet called Newsreel. He shares his vision for what he calls the Palestinian Emirates, or 8-state solution. I think it's one of the more specific, targeted, researched, and practical ideas that are being put forward. If you know me, you know that I love ideas. I don't love talking about problems. I love talking about solutions. Let's hear his plan. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kedar. It was great to see you on Sunday at the meeting in the Knesset. And in fact, I thought that you had one of the most unusual ideas, visions, suggestions for the day after Abu Mazen, which was the title of the meeting on Sunday. Can you tell us in English a little bit about your vision or your suggestion for where to go from here?
Well, the question is, do we want a Palestinian entity which is successful or a failure? And this actually is the biggest question. The Arab world in general is divided to 2 kinds of states, the failing states and the successful states. The failing are Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Libya, Sudan, while the successes are Kuwait, Qatar, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and 5 more Emirates with the United Arab Emirates. The question is, why are these failures and why are those successes? Some would say because of the oil in the Gulf. But this is wrong, because Dubai has no oil and Dubai is in heaven on earth, while Iraq, with a lot of oil, is a hell on earth. And so is Libya, hell on earth with a lot of oil. So evidently, it's not the oil. So what is the reason for the success here and the failure there? The answer is the makeup of the state from the social point of view. All the failing states are conglomerates of ethnic groups, of tribal groups, of religions, and sects. While the successful countries, all of them, are based on homogeneous one group, mainly one clan. Kuwait belongs to a clan named Al Sabah. Al is a clan. Abu Dhabi belongs to Al Nahyan. Dubai belongs to Al Maktoum. It's the name of the family. Qatar belongs to Al Thani. Saudi Arabia belongs to Al Saud. Therefore, if you have a homogeneous state, homogeneous society, as a basis for the state will most probably, or always actually in the Arab world, be a successful state with oil like Abu Dhabi or without oil like Dubai. While if you base your state on a conglomerate of ethnic groups like Arabs and Kurds and Turkmens and Berbers in North Africa, or tribes like, you know, Iraq is 74 tribes which do not get married with each other, or religions like in Iraq, 10 religions, 4 religions in Syria, and so forth, or sectarian groups like Shia and Sunnah and Salafis and Sufis and all kinds of others. So this actually what characterizes all the failing states, the multiple groups which never made a nation because they don't get married with each other, and therefore they remain separate from each other. They don't compromise, they don't make a nation, and they keep fighting against each other as they did through history. And this is why the failing states are failing and the successful states are homogeneous and therefore a success. What we want in the Palestinian arena is actually to emulate the successful countries rather than the failing states. Therefore, in order to do this, we have to separate the cities to emirates in each and every one city. Separate emirates. Emirates in Hebron for the clans of Hebron. Another one in Jericho for the clan of Jericho was a different clan. And like the Arikat. And in Ramallah, the Barghoutis, an emirate for the clans of Ramallah. An emirate in Nablus for the Masri, Tukan, and Shaka clans. Another one in Tulkarem for the Karmis. Another one in Kalkilia, another one in Jenin. While Israel should remain forever in the rural areas, either offer Israeli citizenship to the villagers or some different arrangement for the citizenship. This is the only solution which is based on the sociology of the Arab world and the Palestinian arena as well. If you base a state taking in account the sociology, most chances you get a successful state or states. While if you ignore the sociology, as was made by the British and the French when they established all the other countries, the failing states, they are doomed to be a failure, which will deteriorate altogether to be bloodbath, as it is in Syria, in Iraq, in Sudan, in Yemen, and in Libya. And this is actually the answer to what I want to do or what I want to see the day after Abu Mazen. The PA should be dismantled and emirates should emerge from the ruins of this failing attempt to establish another failing state.
How does this look? I understand in concept. How would this be implemented? And how would the Emirates unite? What would be the uniting factor? So I want to understand how the local governments look to you and how the federal government would look to you. I'm an American, so those are the kinds of, I'm using the word federal, but express.
Right. If they decide to make a federation, it's okay with me, as long as they don't have territorial contiguity. Once they are separate and they have a federation, that it's okay with me. However, I'm telling you from now that the people in Hebron will never sit together with the people from Shechem, from Nablus. They hate each other. They don't cooperate with each other. They're actually two different cultures, if you really look into the culture of the places. Therefore, if they want to make a federation, it's okay with me. I am more than sure that they will not.
Why do you not want there to be contiguity amongst the land?
Territorial contiguity might turn into a terrorist contiguity when terrorists can move from place to place. Although usually clans, when they have the government, they don't allow terrorists. But in order to make sure that terrorists are not moving from place to place, these cities, look, anyway, these cities are separate from each other and far away from each other, many kilometers. So Israel will forever remain in the rural areas, and they will be enclaves inside Israel, like Monaco, like Andorra, like Luxembourg, and there are many countries in the world which are enclaves within other countries, Vatican as well, if you want.
Thank you for explaining. Is there anything else that you want to share on this topic?
I think this is Gaza. Let me start again. Gaza was divided from the administrative point of view to five districts. I think that Gaza today, after the returning of the people back to the places which they lived in until the war, they means Gaza Strip should also be divided to five emirates, the same division as it was until the war for administrative reasons. And since each and every part is taking in account the social makeup of the society, this can be a very good basis for how to look at Gaza in the day after the war.
With five different regions?
Five emirates based on the five regions which traditionally the Gaza Strip is divided to.
Okay. And each region is governed by its local governing body.
By its local clans, right.
Okay. Thank you
so much. Not Hamas and not Abbas.
Not Hamas and not Abbas. There were, I noticed that at the, I've understood that at the top of the meeting when you started to express yourself in the Knesset, you made a disclaimer that you think that most of the people around the circle don't know what you know. Why do you think it is that the information that you understand is so poorly distributed or so unknown by most people?
Because unfortunately, Israel is just like Americans and Europeans. They don't speak Arabic, and they are not much familiar with the sociology of the Arab world. They might know something about politics here and politics there, but sociology is something which is under the current and or behind the scenes. Therefore, people don't understand why the failing states are failures while the successful states are successful. They don't think about these things. And once somebody comes and to show them and shows them the differences in the social point of view, which is translated into anything else in economy and governance. So when they understand, they start to support the Emirate idea, which I'm trying to push forward for years already.
How many years have you been trying to get this off the ground?
15 at least.
Do you think this is going to be a turning point for your work?
I hope.
Thank you so much for sharing your mind with us and your time with us and your ideas. We are all about ideas. I love to share ideas. I think it's the most human thing that we have is to share our ideas. So thank you so much for that. And have a great evening. If you've never heard him talk about this before, I think that you might have found that really fascinating. Now we are going to move over to our next voice. Since concluding his military career at the rank of colonel, Grisha Yakubovich has rapidly emerged as an expert on policy matters. He went from the infantry soldier to colonel as the head of the Civil Department for the Coordination of Government Activities in the Territories, also known as COGAT. The colonel now manages his own company, speaking and promoting business between Israelis and Palestinians. Colonel Yakubovich was born and spent the early part of his life in the former Soviet Union and moved to Gaza in, well, the Gaza border in southern Israel when he was around 5 years old. Today, he works on creating business ties between Israelis and Palestinians. He was highlighted to me as one of the important voices on the panel. Let's hear what he has to say about the day after Abu Mazen. Excellent. And one thing that I saw, that I thought when I was invited to this was, I think it's good and important for people to be preparing, for people to be sitting down and sharing ideas and future suggestions. Did you feel a similar way, or are you frustrated with the lack of planning? Do you feel that there's enough planning? Do you think there's enough discussion about the future affairs?
Well, if it depends on who you ask. If it's the government, I think it's not enough. And this is, I think, the main purpose of this meeting yesterday. So I don't know if you remember, but the majority of the ones who participated were institutes, research institutes, also coming from different agendas, right wing, left wing, central wing. So I think this is it was a unique opportunity for the first time to see so many institutes with so many experts, with so many different views and ideas that were gathered in one place. And it opens a window of opportunity. Actually, when you met me and you started to ask me a question, I've been in the middle of a discussion with the one who invited me. And I told her that this is it is amazing. Yes, there was a lot of disagreement there in that room. But at least what we can come out of there is maybe to widen that, maybe to do it again and again, and to find the common base that they all share. So at least what they all agree upon, let's write it down and let's argue about the things that we disagree about. And she accepted that, and she said that she is right, that I'm right. No, because I think I was the only one there who was not part of an institute. It's like I was the only freelance like you. In that hole, what will be the challenges for the state of Israel the day after? So when I started to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's not more than four. It's not a plan, but as an IDF officer, we always count 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like it must be in a certain order. So actually, I counted the challenges that the government of Israel will need to take in consideration the day after Abbas.
And
Okay.
what are those challenges as you see them?
First of all, I connected between the day after Abbas and the day after the war. It's very connected to each other. And the day after Abbas will be influenced a lot from the day after the war. Because if the day after the war will be the day that we lost, or the day that we were defeated, as Hamas will show it. It means the day after Abbas, probably the radicals will be the ones who will lead the Palestinian entity for their future. But if the day after the war will be the war that Israel won, and I don't know to tell you exactly how will the picture of victory would look like, but as for now, it looks like we are winning. It means the day after Abbas will be people who will adopt or will continue with the narrative that Abbas is leading, that he is against violence. But one of the things that we just published this, I think today, that Abbas flew somewhere, I don't remember already where, it's hard to catch up. And he, as it said there, it was, or he already offered Hamas that if they want to be a part of something in the future, they should accept the following conditions. One of them is a condition that they will not support violence. By the way, I look at it as a window of opportunity for the future, if you ask me. But this is not the time to talk about it, because if I will talk about it, somebody will listen and somebody will put some sticks in the wheel, so the plan will fail.
Okay. Do
Yeah.
you have a vision? Do
Yes,
you have an idea?
it's not a vision. I will talk about I will explain the challenges as I see them. Okay. One of the challenges now, an immediate one, is that the state of Israel should say what she would accept. Okay? It means Israel should say yes to something and not always we don't accept. Okay? It's like somebody in the government adopted what President Biden said, don't, and they always say no, don't do that and don't do that. It's about time we say what should we do. Okay? So this is challenge number one. This is the basic challenge. What do we want to do and not what we don't want? Let's not forget that in 2023, 52 Palestinian officials were terrorists who were killed by the IDF as terrorists, and they were PA officials. They got salaries from the PA. So it is one of the difficulties or one of the obstacles to why the government of Israel says no to the PA. Okay. It's not obvious that 52 Palestinian officials are terrorists with illegal weapons trying to kill Israelis. And Israel will start planning something with the same people who are trying to kill the people who want to plan. So there is a contradiction. Okay. And I also said that when we talk about the day after, we need to be patient, really patient, because Mahmoud Abbas is at the age, he's going to celebrate next month, 88, I think. And let's not forget that his dad lived till the age of 102. So when we say the day after, what should we expect? Let's not also forget that.
Right.
Challenges. One, Israel will have to make sure that there is no Iran, Hezbollah, and others involvement in the West Bank and in Gaza the day after. It's not only an Israeli challenge. This is a Western world challenge, if you ask me. One of the challenges that we will need to make sure that we know and we are prepared is what when I lead tours and lectures during the last 5-6 years, Gaza, West Bank, and others, I always say that we are expected, or the Palestinian arena is the day after Abbas will reach to a Palestinian civil war. And the Palestinian civil war is something that we should avoid from. Or I think that this will be a challenge to Israel, because usually when there is a civilian war, the weapons is turned against you. And maybe we will be the reason, you know, when there is a civil war and people will try and organizations will try to buy the heart of the people, support us, support them, support us. I think they will start terror attacks, and each one of them will try and show himself as a hero and how many Jews he killed. So he will gain more support, because this is the narrative now, okay? The narrative of violence, of terror, of mukawama, resistance. So we need to make sure this is a challenge, right? The third challenge is future elections of the Palestinian Authority. The question is, we will eliminate Hamas and Page in Gaza. Yes. Okay, it will be their leadership today. Okay, what about the future? Should they participate as a political entity, the future elections? Yes, no. When it happened last time, and the United States supported that, it brought Hamas to win the elections. That's another challenge. Challenge number four, money. Money will continue be given to the Palestinian Authority and to the Palestinian Authority the day after. The challenge is, who will inspect it? Who will make sure that the money will not be used to empower terror, like it happened with UNRWA in Gaza? You know, countries donated money from goodwill to an important organization that helps people, helps. Let's put aside the political issues there, okay? Let's put it aside. Okay, refugees, yes, no, we will get over them. Eventually, we're talking about people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the goal and the cause was a wonderful one, okay? We are the Western world, and we want to donate to the poor people in the somewhere so they will have a better life. And actually, what happened with the money, that instead of a better life, the same organization that got the money was used by terror as a platform to execute terror attacks, okay? So in the future, when the PA will get the money from the donor community, who will inspect and make sure that the money are given and used for the purpose that they were actually donated? It's a challenge. If you will ask me what is the most important lesson that we learned from this war, is that any dollar that will be given, the ones who gave the dollars should make sure that the dollar is used for the right purpose, not only given. It's a challenge. It's a huge challenge to the Western world, okay? Number five, let's stop talking about peace. Let's talk about arrangements, agreements for a better future. Maybe that better future in the future will be, I don't know, bridges for a better future that will also be used as bridges for peace. But for now, let's stop talking about peace, that they should declare that and we should declare that and they will recognize that and we should recognize that. They will not and we will not. Let's put that aside, okay? Let's not dream about peace, because peace is not close. If you would ask me before the war, when I led my tours and gave my lectures, what do I think about peace? I would tell you then, I think that peace might happen 30 to 50 years from today. We will need a generation. We will need to, you know, to educate a new generation on both sides. Now, after the war in Gaza, we will need two generations. So let's put peace aside and let's talk about a better future. It means let's be more pragmatic. It's a challenge for Israel and for the day after Abbas to talk not about peace, but to talk about arrangements, okay? Because when you talk about peace, you enter to political arguments of who has the right to. And if we want to get to peace, so we need to put an end to this conflict. That's why we will not be able to put an end to this conflict. So let's put that aside. And let's talk and be and talk about something pragmatic. Israel has to be prepared for a huge, huge international Arab and Western pressure to reach to understandings, to reach to an agreement. And that will be a huge, huge pressure on Israel. So as faster as this state of Israel writes or presents, how will the day after look like and what will be the plan? It will be better than somebody else that will tell you how it will look like. That's why it's so important to present a plan for the day after the war and the day after Abu Mazen. Another challenge is, and it's a challenge, we've seen the outcome of the reality since June 2007 and until October 7th, actually. We've been in the reality of a three-state solution. And that was bad. We've seen what it led to. We've been in the reality of a Hamas state in Gaza, Hamastan. We've been in the reality of a Fatah state in the West Bank that is becoming Fatahstan, unfortunately, and the state of Israel. And now, without a plan for the day after in Gaza, it means there will be no plan for the day after Abbas. We will find ourselves again with the challenge of a three-state solution because this current government says no to the PA in the Gaza Strip. It means the current government says we are going to face another period, okay? Another, I don't know, 4 years, 10 years, 20 years of dealing with two different Palestinian entities that are not connected. Or they will be connected, I don't know. And that's another challenge. Two different policies, two different leaders. You know, it opens many, many, many questions. And another challenge, and this is a very important challenge, is I don't recall in the Middle East any Western interference or support or leadership, French tried to create leadership in Lebanon, Syria. They failed. The British mandate tried to do it in Egypt and it failed. I think that the only success is in Israel, if you ask me, as weird as it sounds. Only here, the British mandate and there was the Jewish leadership and it stayed as a Jewish state. You know, now when I think about it, I forgot to say it yesterday. But in all the Arab countries in the Middle East, okay, any Western interference failed. In Libya, by Italy, all over the Middle East. It means if we will start talking about the day after and we will start planning it after, it will be a Western interference. That's a challenge. How we do that without us actually being there? It's a challenge. Otherwise, it will fail.
It's a big challenge. I have several questions for you in response to that. I'm going to go with you starting from the point of the Western interference. Do you believe, as an insider, that there are conversations, the conversation that we had in the Knesset about the day after Abu Mazen, are there Palestinians that are getting together around a table and having this discussion? Are there Arab nations that are getting around a table and having this discussion? I mean, we know that there was a conference that Saudi Arabia just hosted in which this was a discussion, but how much is this happening?
The question is yes. That's why I said that the outcome of those meetings and discussions, this is a challenge for Israel, the Palestinian civil war, because they will disagree. And there is a fight between narratives. Hamas led a narrative with huge success, resistance, muqawama. For me, it will be terror. And, you know, I'm not going to cover my eyes or ears and say, no, it's not real. I'm sorry that this is what I'm saying, but as for now, the war that Hamas opened on October 7th is, as for now, a defeat to Israel unless we will change it. And we are about to change it. It means they also created an equation during the years that if you want to get something from Israel, you should use power. So the equation is use power, Israel will give. And we poured content into this equation. So actually we helped Hamas to empower the narrative of resistance, of muqawama, of terror. They kidnapped a soldier, Shalit. We released 1,025 prisoners. They launched rockets. We negotiated. We added, Kerem Shalom crossing with 1,000 trucks a day. Where they led another round of escalation in May 2021. We opened the borders for the workers to work in Israel. It means if you want to get something, if I would be Hamas and I would present it to my people in Gaza, I would say, if you want to get something from Israelis, let's launch rockets on them. This is the only language that they understand. And we help them to understand it. Now, Mahmoud Abbas said to no to violence. And what did he get for that? He said no to violence. He said, I'm against violence. I'm only supporting our fight to achieve our goals by international community, by international pressure, by negotiation, but no to violence. And what did he achieve?
You tell me.
Nothing. Zero. The Israeli government told he is irrelevant. He is not a partner. I'm not saying that if we would do it differently, it would succeed. I'm just saying how it is presented.
And why do you think that Mahmoud Abbas is an afterthought in all of these conversations?
What do you mean, afterthought? Like, he's irrelevant. He's too old.
That was sort of what I was asking. Do you believe that his age...
I think that he and we missed the window of opportunity with Abbas. So he is irrelevant. Unfortunately, he's also corrupted. Now, again, it doesn't mean that Hamas are not corrupted. I think that they are even more corrupted. Just Mash'al and Haniyeh sit on a fortune of $11 billion that they actually stole from the mouth of the people of Gaza, okay? But it doesn't matter. They are the heroes, and the heroes can steal. Heroes can take. Heroes can be corrupted because they are heroes. Abbas is not a hero, so he is corrupted. He should go away.
I wanted to ask you, what was your response when you heard Dr. Kedar, and he talked about his idea for a united Arab, a united Palestinian Emirates, bringing together all the different little cities and giving each city authority? What do you make of that plan?
Well, I pay him a lot of respect, being such an educated man, okay, with an impressive knowledge, okay. I disagree with the conclusions that he concluded, having all this knowledge.
Do you think that there is any validity from your eyes of understanding that different cities have different ideas? And you touched on this a little bit when you said that there are different schools of thought and that could lead to a civil war within Palestinians. What are some of those schools of thought, and how is it possible that they're so widely different from city to city, even if the cities are not so far away from one another in the West Bank, for example?
I told you that if in the past I was sure that it will take a generation or 30 to 50 years to reach the peace, now it will take two generations, and we will need to make sure that all of us change education, in schools, in our houses. It's about time that the, and this is for the Palestinians, it's about time that they take responsibility. And this is something, I don't know if you already heard, but if not, I'm going to teach you, okay? Usually here in Israel, when we blame somebody, we do like that. It's like, I blame you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I blame you.
Sure.
Let's not forget, there's also force majeure, God or Allah, that has an impact on that. And there are also three fingers that are pointed at you. So before you blame us, Palestinians, take responsibility, okay, on your actions, on your ideas, on your culture, on your education, on what you want to achieve, and then start blaming us. Now, the moment they will start taking responsibility on their future, and they, for example, for one thing, they will change one thing, okay? They would say, we believe in life, and we don't believe in death. Okay, it's a basic, basic thing that, you know, we worship life. We believe in life. We will do whatever is needed to rescue our people. We will sacrifice ourselves as an army to release the people who were kidnapped, okay, the hostages. And for them, the moment somebody dies, they bury him and they celebrate. It's a shaheed. It's a shaheed, and we love being shaheed. And even Iran, okay, now they mark this war as the path to Jerusalem, the road that is paved to Jerusalem, you know, in the sky. Like if you die, it brings you closer to Al-Aqsa, and I don't know. So the moment they will do this basic, basic shift and say, we believe in life and not in death, it will be the beginning of taking responsibility.
Okay, sure. Thank you. In addition to education, do you have any other ideas or plans that you, in an ideal world, would see happen 1, 2, 3, 4, or that you'd lay out in addition to changing education and giving two generations? What would you start to build if you didn't have any opposition?
You know, we have peace with Jordan and Egypt for the last three decades.
Yes.
But it's peace between governments.
Yes.
Oslo, the Oslo Accord, the Oslo process is also between, let's say, governments. I would say it's a top-down agreement. It's a top-down peace process. Now, what about the down? Let's look at MBC, Mohammed bin Salman. He is in a process, I think the last decade, of preparing the society in Saudi Arabia to accept something new. It's a process. So he started to allow women to drive cars. Yeah, I know, maybe sounds weird to Western women, like, what is the meaning of that? But that was a huge change. He's not forcing women to wear hijab in Saudi Arabia. And he changed the books in schools, that in those books Israel exists. And only now he started to be a little bit clearer about, in the future, there might be normalization with the Israeli or Jewish entity over there. And this is the problem with the peace with Egypt, with Jordan, and with the Palestinian Authority. The process must be done top-down and bottom-up. And bottom-up, it's education. Bottom-up, it's also a government that says you should do things on the ground differently. No incitement. No incitement on TV. No TV series that you see there how people glorify terrorists who slaughter Jews. They should change basic things so this process will be not only top-down but also bottom-up, and it will meet somewhere. And it takes time to do it. This is when I said responsibility, okay? This is the meaning of responsibility. Take responsibility on your life. First of all, say we value life. Nothing is respected. There's no respect in being a shaheed. Observe the air, hug humanity, respect your family. Creating a better future for your family. This is honor and not a phone call from somebody who is so happy to announce to his parents, and his mom even cried from happiness. And he said, I killed 10 Jews with my own hands. And she said, oh my God, you are amazing. I adore you. This is what things should be changed, okay? This is the basic things that should be changed. There's nothing, there's no honor in killing people. There's no honor in terror. There's no honor in raping women. There's no honor in cooking babies in an oven. There's no honor in that. It's, they should be ashamed as a culture that this is what their education and what their incitement and their values brought them to do.
Thank you so much for going there and sharing that idea. And I know that you are steering away from the word vision, but I can see it when you share it. So I'll think about it here. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us that you haven't shared yet?
Next time.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Dan Diker is a senior fellow and longtime director of the Counter-Political Warfare Project at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. He's the former Secretary General of the World Jewish Congress and a research fellow of the International Institute of Counterterrorism at Reichman University, formerly known as IDC Herzliya. He's a Harvard graduate and was born and raised in New York City before making his adult life in Israel. He felt very charged after the two-hour meeting came to an end, and we were able to grab his audio right then and there on the Knesset floor. Have a listen to what he has to say. What are your suggestions and ideas for the day after Abu Mazen?
First of all, the day after Mahmoud Abbas is already today. In fact, it was already 19 years ago when Israel withdrew unilaterally from the Gaza Strip, and it created a completely new perceptual reality for the world, which is that Hamas is in charge, Mahmoud Abbas is no longer in charge. That has been the reality in the Palestinian arena for the last 19 years. The 7th of October massacre basically was the crown jewel of the notion that the Hamas are today leading the Palestinian street and not Mahmoud Abbas. However, having said that, there are very important implications from the 7th of October about what to do starting today, because the day after Mahmoud Abbas is today. It's not in the future. And what needs to be done is for Israel to adopt several what are called principles of peacemaking or principles of diplomacy that would require any Palestinian leadership, whether he or she or they want to subscribe and become partners with the State of Israel, that they would have to denounce and reject all forms of incitement to murdering Israelis, all forms of cash compensation or incentivization to murder Israelis, all forms of international psychological, legal, or media warfare against Israel and its right to exist. Because those three principles were completely ignored by the Palestinian Authority, and in fact were principles of warfare of the Palestinian Authority. And that is what made the Palestinian Authority conception paved the road to the October 7th massacres.
So what are the options moving forward?
Israel is required to defeat the Hamas completely. Hamas must be seen perceptually and physically to be the loser, to be the vanquished in this mass murder that it perpetuated by invading sovereign Israel in an unprovoked mass murder, the worst that we've seen since the Nazi era, And that sparked Israel's counterterrorism operation. Israel must win decisively in order to create a healthy outcome in Judea and Samaria, the West Bank. Otherwise, if it does not do that, Israel will be very difficult for Israel to survive in a Middle East that only understands the vanquished and the victor. That's all they understand.
What would you say was the most wildly opposite expression that you heard today from anyone in the room to you? Like the complete opposite side of what you think.
There was one particular analyst who is an Arabist. He is an expert in Arabic issues, but he is driven ideologically as opposed to objectively. And the view that is the most, I would say, far-reaching view, I would call falling off the edge of the world view, is that the Palestinian Authority can actually be restored, revived, revamped, re-energized. We are in a new morning in the post-October 7th reality, in which not only will Israel have to take security control and administrative control for the meantime in Gaza, and security control for an awfully long time, to make sure that no mass murder, no massacre of the sort we saw on October 7th will ever happen again from the south, but also in the hills of Judea and Samaria, in the major Palestinian cities currently under the control of the Palestinian Authority, that the Palestinian Authority will not continue to exist as a centralized authority, because the conceptual mistake that Israel made was to put its faith in a strongman. Whether that strongman was Yasser Arafat or Mahmoud Abbas, they ended up completely losing their legitimacy on the Palestinian street, and Hamas won legitimacy on the Palestinian street. And that is because Israel legitimized a Palestinian authority, and the more it legitimized the authority, the Palestinian street legitimized the Hamas. Therefore, Israel is going to have to localize, as Professor Moti Kedar said, localize the interlocutors and their partners in future diplomatic arrangements by Palestinian city, by family, involve the business sector, involve the lawyers associations, involve the doctors associations, but is going to have to decentralize and localize the partners that they are going to be our future partners for any diplomatic arrangement on the Palestinian side will have to be decentralized city by city and major family by family. That is how the Palestinian cities are organized. They're organized by families, they're organized by clans. And to try to bring a strongman, as Israel did at Oslo, whether it was Yasser Arafat or Mahmoud Abbas or Mohammed Dahlan or anyone else, is a major mistake, because they live and die by incitement to terror and incitement to the dehumanization and the demonization of Israel as the nation state of the Jewish people. That is the narrative that is going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to break, certainly in this generation, potentially in next generation. In the meantime, Israel should pursue what's called a quiet policy of technical and professional cooperation with different segments of the Palestinian cities in Judea and Samaria. No more strongmen. Let's go for local, decentralized leadership and allow the Palestinians to ask Israel for their help. No longer big ceremonies, no longer big public peace processes. Those have brought disaster.
Thank you so much.
Okay, good.
Very fascinating stuff. Again, I really care about ideas. I really think that it's great to bring people into a room. And member of Knesset Sharon Haskel said that she was going to take all of the ideas, have them put together onto a document, and that she was going to present this document to the Knesset in order to push some of these concepts forward and see where that takes them. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Subscribe to the Israel Daily News Podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing it from. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week, and of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. A big thank you goes out to our social media director, Michelle Milner. I'll send you off with a song called Cheery Beam by Erica Krall. Have a great and productive day.